Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we continue on the Paul Verhoeven train with RoboCop. We run through what makes this satirical masterpiece so great, from its dynamite cast to its incredible special effects to its multifaceted social commentary.
Travis.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I don't know why you're pointing a gun at me.
I am Podcast Bot. We make no mistakes.
I like that in the future. I hope that robots still talk and function like robots, like very robotically, but laugh. Give little like side laughs to comments.
That was not a laugh. That was a malfunction in my program.
Oh, we should probably fix you up here. Why don't you bend over here? Okay, there we go. All right, now say something for me.
Oh, hey, hi.
There we go. God, we had to fix you.
Yeah,
You just woke up and you're in robot mode.
Yeah, I've been broken for a while.
That was good. I like how at the very beginning of that, everyone heard Chris. By the way, great acting. That was fantastic. Pretending to be a RoboCop right at the top of the show there. But before that happens, he always likes to count down. So it was like you were powering up 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you went into robot mode.
That's what it was. I was actually mentally being like, how do I be a robot? And then forgot to count down.
Yeah, well, luckily you count down every time, which leads me to believe you might be a robot.
You know, movies are math.
That's the subtitle of this show.
I know. I have a lot of math to bring up in this episode, too.
Movies are math, art is numbers, everything can be tracked, formulated, and equated.
Oh, yes. I think every artist would agree.
Yeah.
Of course. RoboCop. Yeah. I was excited for this one.
Yeah. I watched it recently because I think I bought the 4K. I mean, I've watched it within the last year, I think. Mm-hmm. So there was a part of me that was just like, oh, I kind of watched it recently. I don't know if I really want to watch it again. And then I remember like, oh, wait, like it's the second I put in the 4K, I was like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. I can't wait to watch this.
So exciting. Yeah, I got the 4K recently, too. I wasn't sure what the difference was between the director's cut and the theatrical cut, but it's gore. That's it.
Yeah. You just watch Murphy get blown up a little bit more.
Yeah. It's funny because I saw this movie when I was a kid because of the animated cartoon show that came out. There was like a Saturday morning RoboCop cartoon show. Do you remember this? Did you watch this?
I know it exists, and that's all I can really offer to that conversation because I didn't watch Saturday morning cartoons.
What? Oh, man.
So I watched Pokemon. That was about it.
Okay. I was watching from like an early, early age, as many cartoons as I could all the time. This only ran the show from October 1st, 1988 to December 17th. That was it.
I feel like every time you look back at shows like this, like old animated shows, that's all usually the case. Like they just pumped out a bunch of episodes all at once and they just keep reshowing them all the time.
Yeah, that was they would be on TV every now and then. The thing for me, it says on the Wikipedia page, in 1991, 3 episodes of the series were released as VHS volumes. That's what I had.
Oh, wow.
So I had a VHS tape with the RoboCop episodes that I thought was awesome. And I would watch it all the time. So I somehow convinced my parents, because I liked the cartoon, to rent me the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we're talking that VHS tape coming out in 1991. So I was 4 years old at the time, which means that, you know, it had to have been around when I was like 5, 6, that this was happening. So yeah. I watched RoboCop for the first time when I was like 5, 6, 7 years old, like in that range. And I still remember being so weirded out by how different it was from the cartoon.
Yeah.
Especially the opening scene with Murphy, right? When he's just shot to ribbons.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that even though I've seen this movie a number of times since, in my mind, I still always imagine him being on the ground when they fire at him rather than standing. So I have some false memory of when I first saw the movie. Yeah.
That's... Yeah. Is that have something to do with the theatrical cut?
I don't think so. I think he is standing when it happens in like every cut, but for some reason there's something with him being on the ground. I think maybe I might be conflating it with who's the bad executive? Not Dick Jones, but the other guy.
Bob Morton.
Yeah, Bob. What happens with Bob where he's on the ground and gets shot?
Yeah, he's horizontal.
Yeah, he's horizontal. But it's one of those things that's always I've always had a strange relationship with, because, you know, when you see it as a kid, you're overwhelmed by so much of the violent nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also just expected RoboCop to just be RoboCop from the beginning.
Yeah. Totally.
So I still have this feeling of being like, where's RoboCop? Where is he? I'm just expecting RoboCop to be there.
You're just reminding me of how fucking awesome this movie is, that there's a build to RoboCop.
Yeah. And then I was always kind of pissed as a kid, because I would rewatch the movie a few times, even before college, where he didn't have his helmet on. I always thought it was lame that he took his helmet off. And that was one of those things where just the aesthetics of it, I was like, I want the helmet on. And now as you know, a fully functioning adult person, I understand not only for Peter Weller's sake why they don't have him in the helmet all the time, but also the thematic reason for not having him in the helmet the entire time.
Yeah.
But he looks so much better with the helmet on.
I don't know. That was one thing. I mean, I already knew this about the movie. And I think probably the most fascinating aspect of this movie is just the special effects and the makeup work. Like, the amount of fucking work these people did for this movie, it just blows my mind every time. But when Murphy takes his mask off and how they make it look real, like, it's kind of insane how well they do it.
Yeah. I kept staring at the back of his head the whole time.
Me too. I was like, how did they do it?
Because it's one thing when you look at, what is it? When you look at the, why am I forgetting? The ED-260, Ed. When you look at Ed and you see the Phil Tippett animation, you're like, okay, that looks cool, but you can tell just how animated that is or how stop motion that is versus everything else.
Right.
But Murphy's skull still to this day looks so realistic that I'm staring at it being like, how did they do that?
I as I'm saying that out loud, I wish I knew more about it. It makes me wonder, like, if it is practically done, how much of that is special effect or like not even really him? I don't know. I guess that's the kind of thing we should know before heading into this, but still, it's how real it looks in the moment. You could just, it's just mind blowing.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
I think I'm reading here that it's not his head.
It's some,
but it looks so real. Again, that's a testament to it.
Yeah, it looks really. I mean, they did a great job with the practical effects. I mean, even the violent effects. when people are getting shot up by Ed, or when Murphy's getting shot up, it just, the gore and the explosions that happen, just all the practical aspects of this film are really impressive. And that was one of the things that just stood out to me on this rewatch, is I miss this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've been feeling that so much lately with newer movies, just especially I saw the Marvels over this last week. Mm-hmm. And it has some really cool visuals and CGI and effects, but at the same time, I'm just sitting there going, I wish there was more that was practical. Like, I find it, I'm finding that as I'm getting older, as I'm like watching more and more new movies, I'm finding myself not able to connect as much with things that are less practical.
Yeah. I recently watched a movie called Demons 2. I watched Demons 1 after it, don't worry. I had never seen it. It was, I didn't choose to watch Demons 2. It kind of came up in this show we were watching. It's like a double feature show, and they show two movies. And I was absolutely blown away by the practical effects in the movie. Like, there's demons, there's crazy blood. Like, it's all insane. The way people die, the way demons come to life, like the way they make people look like demons. I just thought it was unbelievable. I'd never seen anything like it. And it just, like, I had the same feeling as I was watching of like, gosh, like, this is so moving to me. This is so, I'm forming such a connection to this because, like, I don't have this anymore. Like, you never see anything like this. It's, to me, that's an important part of, like, your connection to a movie, is when you see the people who made it, you know? And you're totally right about RoboCop. It's just, the coolest part of this movie is how in everybody seems for it. Like, from the actors who are all, you know, like, kind of hamming it up and having a fun time with it and all part of the satire and everything, but just how well it's done, how much people cared to make things look real and make you part of this world. Like, that's really important for my, when I'm watching a movie, for me to feel connected to it.
Yeah. I mean, even just the guy that gets the toxic waste dumped on him.
Yeah.
And the effects of that. It's such a thing that you could say, we don't need that. Let's just not take the time to make him so gross and to have so many shots and then blow him up by hitting him with a car.
Yeah.
And yet they do it. And it's wonderful.
It's, that was the feeling I had while watching this movie. And there are so many parts, like even that part that you just mentioned, down to any special effect that's done, or just the moment where RoboCop's standing there in his shadows, like towering above the guys, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's so many just moments in this movie. It's just filled with these moments where I'm like, man, this movie is so fucking cool. Like, it's okay to make a cool movie and make it as cool as you possibly can. And, like, that was just, again, a feeling I had about modern movies the whole time. It's like, nothing tries to be cool anymore. Like, everybody's, like, trying to, like, placate and tiptoe and cater to a mass audience where, like, RoboCop, like, this is what stands the test of time when you're just, like, committed to being a cool movie.
Yeah, you might enjoy Saltburn. That might be up your alley.
Okay. I mean, I like everybody in it, so I'll watch that movie.
I it's one that's stayed with me ever since that first viewing, and I still remember the first time that I realized that it had to have been satire. It was something, because the times that I saw it prior to high school, I just took it kind of straightforward as more of a B-tier action movie.
That's how the rest of the world looked at it.
Yeah, with some cool aspects. And I remember when I realized Starship Troopers was satire, suddenly being like, oh, that means that it's RoboCop and Total Recall are both satire. I need to revisit these and really update how I'm looking at them.
Yeah.
And ever since, you know, late high school, early college, when that happened, I've had such respect for Verhoeven.
Yeah. It's funny because at the time, neither RoboCop or Total Recall, and I was even doing a little Google searching for my Showgirls article, and I found some Reddit threads of people saying, like, people say RoboCop satire, like, just to make it sound, basically the mindset is like, oh, if a cinephile is allowed to like RoboCop if they just call it satire, you know, and intellectualize it, like, there's still people kind of fighting against it. But yeah, there was this whole, people didn't really see RoboCop and Total Recall as satire, which is like crazy to me. And until Starship Troopers, which was like, I guess, more overt about it, or like by the time, like, Verhoeven had done it this many times, like, people finally locked in, like, oh, this is a satire of totalitarianism, and like, they look back and see, like, media capitalism, and it all just starts to make sense, I guess. That's the way to watch this movie. Like, once you kind of lock into that and the satire, it becomes a whole different movie.
Starship Troopers was also famously not understood for satire. There were people who were upset that he made such a pro-fascist movie.
I just feel like this is just from my vantage point anyway, like, the reception of Starship Troopers as satire, I remember hearing about that before I heard about, like, RoboCop as satire, you know? And I didn't even really find many articles about Total Recall being satire, even though that movie to me is clearly satire.
I know. I mean, it's weird because you would expect Total Recall, RoboCop, the years that have passed leading up to Starship Troopers, that people, I mean, we talked about it with Showgirls.
Sure.
Yeah. That people would have understood with Showgirls a little bit more of the tongue-in-cheek nature of some of the things. And they absolutely did not. And their reviews from when Starship Troopers came out, of people taking it just as straightforward as possible. And it seemed like it was just 2 years, like, within a 2-year time period, you had people being like, satire, you idiots, satire, you idiots. And it's because, as you said, it's so much more overt that it's satire. And you should get it in RoboCop from the opening.
I'd say RoboCop's pretty overt about it.
Yeah, like, all the TV news stuff, local news stuff, it's is so overtly satire, in the same way with Starship Troopers that you have the little propaganda videos that are so over the top.
Yeah.
But people just didn't appreciate it.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
That's one level of it, is that you see a movie like this, and as we talked about with Showgirls, it was kind of the case with a lot of his movies when he first came to Hollywood, that it's almost like this kind of movie isn't allowed to be respected, you know? And the second it starts getting that kind of respect from, like, a fringe audience, from a small audience, it seems like there's this population that likes to beat it down as much as they can and say, like, no, like, you're not allowed to like this. This isn't smart. Like, that's definitely one aspect of it. But also, I think a bigger part of it is, and this is something I found when writing the Showgirls article and trying to define satire, is I kind of started to understand why someone wouldn't see something like RoboCop or Showgirls as satire, because satire largely involves comedy. And if you have, like, a narrow view of what comedy is and, like, how comedy works in a satire, I think you could look at something like RoboCop and maybe not see satire and just see social commentary, you know, something that's just exaggerated. But as I wrote about it, I kind of started realizing and thinking about just, like, famous satiric examples from novels to movies. Like, it isn't necessarily you just have to expand your idea of comedy, basically, like going on to like exaggeration and irony and like anything that's just ridiculing with like a heightened sense, you know, like to me that starts to dip into the satire camp. And that's why Verhoeven was just such a great fit for it. I saw an argument that like, oh, like Showgirls isn't satire. It was written by Joe Esterhaus, who didn't even write RoboCop on Total Recall. And it made me realize like how important Verhoeven is to the satire, because the way he directs people, the way his movies move, like they kind of lend their energy to satire. Like it's so exaggerated, like it's so ridiculous, like you almost like don't take anybody seriously because of the way they're acting, yet they're taking it very seriously, and these are very serious topics that we're all dealing with. Like it's just so cool that he's able to, that Verhoeven was able to just unlock the, I don't know, he's got the satire key, I guess. Like even his movies today kind of feel like that, like Benedetta, you could view it as a satire of religion or something, like it, because it's just so ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that tonal stuff really does make a difference, because, I mean, you could play any script for comedy just by the tone of voice that somebody uses with something. You could make Goodfellas a lot more dramatic with the exact same script. You could make it slapstick with the exact same script just based on how the actors... That. Like, imagine the dialogue in Home Alone, but given in, like, a dramatic way.
Yeah, right.
All of that makes a huge difference. And, yeah, Verhoeven, I think, has the ear and eye for that.
I just love it. I mean, to me, I guess we should kind of talk about our history of the movie. Me, personally, like... I didn't grow up watching this movie. I didn't grow up watching the RoboCop cartoon. I think the only cartoon I ever had that I actually did watch, we had the Mr. Magoo VHS. You remember that show?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow.
Which is like, would watch Mr. Magoo. God, I was an old man at like age 5.
Yeah.
So I had no real history. I'm so stupid. I always know I can look up when I first watched RoboCop. I imagine I watched it before Showgirls. That would be nuts if I hadn't done that. It was only a couple months before Showgirls, so okay.
August, I watched
2012, sorry.
Nice.
And I've watched it, you know, here and there throughout. I have one of my best friends, Tony, who listens to the show. What's up, Tony? He really like, oh, do you hear my daughter?
Yeah, she's having a good time.
Yeah, she's being potty trained. Apparently, she likes it. I think her aunt's over here. Okay, that makes sense. Tony really loves this movie. So, like, I feel like it's, maybe we've watched it a couple times together, but it's always like, RoboCop always seems like it's been in the air, I guess, because he really likes it. I'm always just like kind of aware of this movie, and always knew that it was satire and knew that it like deserved some respect. But I don't know if I always loved it as much as everyone else until the last couple viewings, especially maybe it was the 4K that kind of unlocked it for me. I think on some level, I always looked at the movie as like kind of dumb, you know, not in a bad way, just like it was satire in the most blockheaded way possible. And that there wasn't like a ton of depth to it because of that. But I feel like that's just representative of a more highbrow, art housey Travis Bean, who used to watch movies and like wasn't allowed to like movies like that more. But I would say in the past like 5 years, I've just become very attached to it. And the 4K especially just revealing how beautiful it's shot and how well it's put together and just how good it looks and how much work people put into it. Like it manifests an energy to me, like it's manifested an energy over time that's just, it feels special. Like it feels like a movie I don't get to watch very often, and I should cherish it while I'm watching it. That a movie is, it makes this movie seem smarter, basically, you know, that like it's not just a bunch of people who like did like put together a blockheaded movie. Like they really put time and effort into this. Like they cared about the message, and it's kind of softened my view of it and made me realize that it's as highbrow as it can possibly be, really. Like it's as smart as it could possibly be because it's doing that. Like it doesn't take itself too seriously or anything. It's kind of just committed to the message and doing it well. And in that way, it's really smart.
Yeah, that's what I really appreciate. Not just that it has a message about, you know, where crime was at in the 80s, because if you watch a lot of 80s movies, even early 90s movies, crime was certainly a consistent topic. I mean, even going back to late 70s, when did Taxi Driver come out?
That was 70.
Yeah, because Taxi Driver is 76. Yeah. I mean, New York was pretty bad for a while in terms of crime, but it was getting not great in a lot of places. So you have a lot of movies that were exploring the criminal aspect of things at that point, and doing so in really harsh ways, like I think Taxi Driver and RoboCop kind of do. And then you have things that are just a little more dystopian and kind of harmless in the sense of The Warriors.
Right. Like
that's, I don't think of that as severe as Taxi Driver or RoboCop is.
Right. It's not as like dramatic.
Yeah. And not as like the public is in crisis, more so that these gangs kind of exist.
Right.
Even Akira, in some ways, is getting at this aspect of crime is kind of taking over, cities are on the decline. So you see a lot of that as a motif, a theme, just one of the zeitgeists of the 70s and 80s. It could have just been another movie that did that, but then it also brings in the media and the media's role in the portrayal of that and the heightening of it, as well as the corporate aspects and the political aspects of it. And I think it was early to the game in the way in which corporations were starting to influence local politics and the impact that they were having on city regulations and the flow of cities and the way in which local communities were benefited or compromised. And the fact that it's not only commenting then on the police aspect in all of this and what was happening to them, but also on policing and government and corporations and media, all of that stuff is being talked about in this movie, but doing so in a way that feels coherent and consistent. That's not easy to do.
And it makes it look very easy.
Yeah, it makes it look very easy, and it feels very streamlined and simple, but this is such a sharp and biting movie. The criticisms it's throwing out there, the people that it's kind of looking at and taking down. Really, like, I'm very impressed by that. And it's one of those things, to be honest with you, there was a part of me that was coming into the episode today still really liking the movie, but in some ways wanting to say, like, it almost felt a little small to me at times. But now that I'm talking about it,
yeah,
it's like, even though it's contained in some ways or small in some ways, like, we don't get to see RoboCop do that much policing, right?
Right.
And you don't really have that much happening in some of the action showdowns or bigger sequences. So there's part of me that's just like, it's just a little small, but it's bursting at the seams because it is talking about so much. So there's part of me that wants it just to kind of thrust in one direction a little more strongly than it does, or have one bigger element to it. But at the same time, it's covering so much ground and doing it so consistently and so well that it's hard to like complain at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, it's, you do kind of get into murky territory there, because like, if you want it to expand on any one thing, like, it sort of takes the movie in a different direction. Like, it's kind of perfect how it is, and very cohesive in the fact, like, as you said, it doesn't jump too far into anything. Like, it's discussing a number of topics that all are part of a bigger whole and all reflect the way society was back in 1987. Like, what America was looking at, and as far as crime in the city, like the way movies talked about crimes in cities, like it's touching on all of that stuff without becoming like too much of one thing. Like it just is representative of a time. Like that's really difficult to do, and to like dedicate enough time to each thing. Like, but the movie totally does it. Like you're right. It could, and in that kind of movie, that kind of script could be edited poorly and feel choppy, like jumping from the media and now jumping to crime. Like, but it just all feels cohesive. Like everything's always constantly commenting on each other.
Yeah. It flows really well.
Yeah. I think that's one of the big things I've learned about this movie over time is as I've watched just more movies from the 80s and even the 70s, like Taxi Driver, just seeing how the world talked about crime in the cities. And then more specifically in the 80s when it just the aesthetic of the time, it blew up to these big action movies, you know, where you got Arnold, you got Sylvester, you have all these people fighting crime in big ways. Like it became like dumb kind of like the way we talked about it. It had to have this machismo mentality. And I think RoboCop, again, it's kind of meta satire in that way, that it's like the hero of the movie has like become a robot. Like that's how we can see the leading man of a movie like fixing crime. Like it becomes something. God, even me just saying that out loud, like that feels really smart. Like that feels like such a step further than movies were going about this topic. It's just so refreshing in that way to experience a new kind of commentary on, you know, something that's been talked about a million times up to that point.
You're now getting the gears turning in my brain of the fact that
good robot.
Yeah, like you have these executives who are trying to craft the perfect action star, essentially.
Yeah.
And they make him like blocky and strong but faceless.
Yeah.
And he's just so robotic, but they're sending him out there to make them a ton of money, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if like a Hollywood commentary is intentional there, but being able to read it as a little bit of Hollywood commentary does seem.
I feel like it's definitely there because, you know, Murphy talks about his kid liking this character who like flips his gun a certain way, and he literally becomes this guy.
Yeah, he starts doing it himself, and then that's part of that dynamic in and of itself is fascinating because it's a human. I'm working through it as I'm trying to talk about it.
It's
something that he starts doing that's more him, even though he got it from a TV show. You're not seeing every cop do it. It's not something that the company made him start doing. It's this aspect of his humanity that's still coming through, but it's something he took from a TV show. Huh.
Yeah. As we're saying, like, it's not like the movie is too light in any one area and the message isn't clear. Like, the messages are all commenting on each other, and like everything you just said traces back to Murphy's whole journey of like discovering himself and defining who he is, and like, what is a name? Like, who are you? How do you define yourself and see yourself? That's such a huge part of his character as he's kind of taken over by this corporation and turned into a robot who does their bidding. You know, his whole journey is being his own person and like, no, like overriding the system and defeating the evil guy. Like it's all working together so well.
Yeah. Oh man. That makes me like it even more that's like an aspect that you can read from it, that there is that commentary. I don't think Verhoeven had done much. This might've been his first kind of Hollywood film, right?
I believe so. He did Flesh and Blood before this, and that has bigger actors in it, but I feel like that was done in Europe.
Yeah, it has like that vibe to it. And still, even then, the budget's $6.5 million.
For Flesh and Blood?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
RoboCop was a pretty big step up with like $13.7 million.
Okay. Yeah, damn.
But so it's like you're coming into a system and you're just immediately commenting on America and American culture and maybe to some degree like American films.
Yeah.
And
it's awesome.
That's
And then Total Recall, especially.
Yeah, and then he does Total Recall, and he works with Arnold, who's just the biggest action star in the world at that point, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Man. Was Arnold even the biggest action star in the world at the 1990?
Well, Steven Seagal did exist.
Steven Seagal did exist.
I would think, yeah, 1990 definitely is.
Like, we're in a good Arnold era at that point. I mean, he had done Terminator, but not Terminator 2.
That's around the corner, though.
Yeah, he had done Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer, Terminator, and then
everything
Red Sonja,
the
Commando, Predator, yeah. Running Man. Oh, man. Yeah. So Arnold had already established himself as this mega name when it came to action movies. So Verhoeven goes from RoboCop, which is this kind of generic Arnold-like figure, to then Total Recall, where he actually gets to work with Arnold and spoof a lot of that stuff even more.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And then I feel like just as time went on, like we said, the satire in both RoboCop and Total Recall, like, it's almost so blunt that you can't believe anybody would miss it, which it does make me realize that it became a little more refined in something like Showgirls, where to me, the satire is like almost meta satire. Like, it's satirizing the way we look at these women on stage and the story, like how they came to be in this position and all of the shitty people that put them there, and like how that affects our relationship with this act and like what we view as eroticism. Like, it's so cool. It's how it's satiric in that way. But you know, the more we talk about RoboCop, I'm kind of realizing like it is kind of meta satire too. Like, the satire might feel obvious and blunt, but there's actually a lot of depth to it. And there's, I don't know. It's just, it's all about the idea and like the little seeds you plant, you know, like the something as small as like talking about his son loving this guy and the way he flips his gun, like that unlocks like so much. It's just, I love this movie for having that kind of attention to detail.
Yeah. We had somebody left a comment on our article about The Killer asking how we're able to make connections between things, or what do we look for in being able to analyze a movie? And it's just something like that. You look at that scene and it's something that can feel very superficial. Like, do they need to include this? Does he have to have a reason for why he twirls his gun? And you can make the story elements of, okay, it connects him to his son, and you want a little bit of that family element, especially because it is so thin in the movie and we never really see the family. So giving one little identifiable moment like that, or one kind of personal connection like that, adds to it. But also, it could have been anything. The fact that they ground it in a TV show causes you to ask, okay, is media a part of this? Is the influence of media a part of this? And when you ask that, you start looking for other ways in which media is used. And yeah, the local TV news is a big part of it. So you're already starting to see two instances of media having an impact on people, with the local news having an impact on more of the macro, where the TV show influencing the son, which influences Murphy, has this more personal impact on the micro level. But you can start to form the argument about the influence of TV and movies and the connection to movies through that, just because of that inroad. And maybe you'll go down some paths and be like, well, you know, actually it's not that strong, or
yeah,
it doesn't develop. But the fact that it is this action figure character that comes through, and knowing what we know of Verhoeven's later movies, you then have to ask the question, is this now a satire of the action genre? The same way that Total Recall is, the same way that Showgirls ends up being this underdog coming of age, like Hollywood dream satire, or the way in which Starship Troopers satirizes military and propaganda and nationalism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like my response to a lot of that, like, if someone wanted to make the argument that the whole Hollywood angle, how we like create these superheroes, how we create these heroes, isn't strong enough just based on the fact like it's not talked about in the movie that much, like my response is just like, it doesn't matter how much it's talked about, it doesn't matter how much information we get about it, it's kind of just dependent on the movie's attitude and the way they discuss the topic. And that's what's so awesome about Paul Verhoeven, is like, I just feel like the one scene where you hear Murphy talk about the guy flipping his gun, and then just seeing the guy flip his gun, like the way this, that scene is shot, and that you see his son and you see the emotional connection and how badass they make the gun flip look, like, to me, that's kind of all the information you need. Like, you get it because the movie did it so well and earnestly. And that's just like, that's all of Verhoeven's movies to me. Like, they just feel so earnest and realized and genuine, all the way from like emotional moments that feel real to and tender, to just like mocking moments that are clearly satire and defining like what's not good. It's, man, I miss that. I wish people who can do that.
You know, one thing that jumped out to me, because we had done Showgirls just before this, and Showgirls is a little further in his filmography, right? It's not like he was a new filmmaker with RoboCop. I mean, he had done, he had a bunch of short films, some documentaries, but
he did some big movies overseas.
Yeah, he had done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a television movie, if we want to count that, 6, 7, 8 films before RoboCop.
Yeah.
So he wasn't like new to this. He was also 50 years old.
Yeah.
When he did RoboCop.
How old he is now.
Yeah. So it's, again, not like, oh wait, 50? Yeah. He was born in 38. Jeez, go
that's
Verhoeven.
Insane.
Yeah. So it's not like he was new to the game, but I feel like just between Showgirls and RoboCop, which is still 8 years, Showgirls is much more impressive to me visually,
right?
And just everything that's happening in the movie, it feels,
there's definitely
like
more going on.
Yeah, it seems like you could tell Verhoeven had leveled up or gained in confidence in how to work within the Hollywood system, or make these kinds of movies for American audiences. I think that was one of the things that jumped out to me, and maybe that was the vibe I was getting from it that I had mentioned earlier, that it feels safe in a way that Showgirls didn't.
Right. I know what
and
you mean.
Maybe that's what makes it more approachable or more beloved than Showgirls, is that it's less audacious. And it does have some great shots and great moments. It's just, it didn't have that kind of live wire charge to me that Showgirls had.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's, excuse the pun, it feels a little more like robotic in the way it's put together, the way it kind of just goes from thing to thing. Where Showgirls, it's, I guess Showgirls is just more focused on like a single thing. You know, that's probably more of what it is. Showgirls is a little more succinct, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, in that way, that what it's exploring and like how it affects like the single character. It does have a broader commentary, but it doesn't make that broader commentary like so obvious like RoboCop does, with like all of the media and stuff, and the way it keeps pulling you in different directions with multiple characters. Like, you're always with Nomi, so like you're kind of centered on one part of the story.
I mean, purely just visually.
Sure, a
shot-by-shot level.
Sure,
to where, like, you think even of the opening when she gets in the car with, is it Jeff? Jim?
It's Jeff.
It's Jeff.
Yep.
Okay. When she gets in the car with Jeff and the shot of them tearing down the highway, you're like, oh yeah, it's just a car driving on the highway. They had to shut down a whole stretch of road in order to film that and get all the other cars on the road when they're on the Vegas Strip. There's so much that's going on, and maybe that's a difference in budget as well, as Showgirls had a $40 to $45 million budget compared to the 13 for RoboCop. But
crazy.
So maybe it's just more of him working within the budget he had at the time as well. But I did just feel like a lot more impressed by the dynamics of his shots and the scene by scene kind of like visuals and how much was going on in Showgirls compared to RoboCop.
Yeah. I feel like maybe what I was ultimately trying to get to is, because Showgirls is the movie it is, like, it lends itself better to that kind of aesthetic and really capturing the environment around them. I mean, it doesn't hurt that it's in Las Vegas and like there's so much going on. But there's something kind of contained and gritty in that way about RoboCop, and that it is kind of focused on just like the television and the media and the dark shadows of the city and kind of the grime and the toughness of the police station. Like, there's just something about it that's a little more contained and lends itself to a more stoic nature, which I think, combined with the commentary and the way it's exploring so many topics, I could see how it just wouldn't be as extravagant as something like Showgirls.
Yeah. I feel like the only time it kind of starts to reach that level of extravagance is in the final chase sequence, mm-hmm. or the final like showdown at the factory.
Yeah.
And some of the shots of them driving and then the whole crane operation and dumping the stuff on RoboCop, like, you're starting to get some of that sense of like scope and scale that you get in Showgirls.
Damn, 13 million. Even thinking about that scene alone, or like the shootout scene where RoboCop captures Clarence, like, that all feels so big. I'm surprised it was only 13 million.
Yeah, they did crazy. A lot.
Yeah, man, workmanship. Just like working their asses off in this movie. I love it.
I don't know. Anything else jump out to you?
One little piece of trivia that I didn't have time. I was going to watch the director's commentary for this movie. I've always been interested in it. I thought this was the perfect time. I just didn't have time to do it. But my friend Tony did watch it and let me know that the guy who is assaulting the woman in the scene where RoboCop's shadow, you know, goes on the wall.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
One of those guys is Andrew Carver from Showgirls.
Oh.
Which is like, it's funny to me that this guy just like, he just plays scumbags in Verhoeven's movies. And I like that he gets his dick shut off. Like, it's almost like payback for what he did to Molly in Showgirls.
Yeah, take that, Andrew Carver. I do think that's the best shot of the movie, no pun intended. It's so cool. When the RoboCop shadows on the wall like that. I took a picture of my TV and posted it to Twitter because I was just, yeah. I was just so amazed by that shot.
Incredible yeah. shot.
Yeah.
Love it.
And then I did like the cast as well. Jumping. I like Nancy Allen.
Love her.
Is always great.
Brian De Palma, regular. Love it.
Yeah, she's the one in Blowout. So
she's in Blowout, but she's especially awesome in Dressed to Kill, I think.
I've never seen Dressed to Kill.
Oh man, it's pretty good. It's really goofy.
Okay, I'll have to give it a shot.
But like, serious, like, it's, you know, it's about a guy killing people. As goofy as something like that can be.
Yeah. But I kind of feel like Kurtwood Smith steals the movie in some ways.
He's awesome. He's so awesome.
He's so good, especially like him and Miguel Ferrer as Bob Morton. Just, man, play such great scumbags.
Yeah. I already love both of those guys from TV shows I grew up liking. Like, A, That 70s Show. Like, obviously Kurtwood Smith is incredible as Red. Like, he's probably the funniest. Him and Kitty are probably the funniest parts of the show, honestly. But then Miguel Ferrer, who, God, I'm blinking on his name, but he's so amazing in Twin Peaks. I just like, I forever have a soft spot for him just because of the role he plays in Twin Peaks and like the asshole he plays. He's really good at playing an asshole, but his character like gets redemption and like eventually sides of Cooper. Like, man, I just, he handled that character so well. I just will always love him.
Nice. I remember him from Tales from the Crypt. I don't, but.
Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I, that was, did you ever used to watch that?
I actually did. Yeah, I guess he would just would have been in one of the short movies or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I always forget I knew Paul McCrane from ER. I used to watch a lot of ER as a kid. My mom would watch it all the time, so I'd catch it. I still remember being all sad when they killed off George Clooney. And then
I can't imagine any child being sad about that, but that's a, but here you go.
Yeah, he was great. I was just like, no, he died saving someone. He went out as a hero. But Paul McCrane, who plays Emil in this, the guy that robs the gas station and gets the toxic waste dumped on him, he was just always really good and intense in ER. So yeah, it's just such a cool cast in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, oh, and one other Twin Peaks alum, Ray Wise, like all of the like douchebag sidekicks of Kurtwood Smith, like,
oh yeah,
they're all great. Yeah, love it.
Okay.
And yeah, I guess that's is that it? We got to rank it, right?
We got to rank it, which I did not do yet.
I have already ranked it because I watched it since. Okay, so these lists for the uninitiated, we rank every movie we've watched since I started my list at the beginning of 2022. Chris started in July of 2022, so my list has a lot more. I think my list right now, I'd never update it, which is so annoying. This is a very simple thing to do. How many more movies have I watched since I last updated it? I haven't added that many. So it's like up to 400, like 85 movies or something like that. And I already had RoboCop ranked. And I feel like the place I have for it is perfect. I don't need to change it. So out of 480 something movies, I'm at number 51.
That's really high for you.
Yeah. The sandwich includes Knock at the Cabin on top, then Bad Boys 2. Then RoboCop, then Billy Madison, then The Miracle Worker, which is a drama about Helen Keller.
Nice. What category does this fall in?
This is my second highest category. So the top category is like, it's very exclusive territory. Like these are the numero uno movies. Basically, I would say like are my absolute favorites. And then RoboCop's the next one in the transcendent category where I'm like, you know, there are movies that are like really great and doing everything I love and like it's elevated above what I normally watch. And then there's transcendent or something like it goes a step beyond that. It achieves something just ethereal beyond what I would ever expect a movie to do.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have to revisit this. My initial inclination, I have it in the third category. I gotta sit with it and see if I'm gonna bump it up or not. I recently revamped the list to have like my favorites as the top tier, so that's essentially like the unique tier which you have. Yeah. Just it kind of transcends quality or like rating, and yeah, it's just like this is some of my favorite things. And then it's wow and impressive, and right now I have RoboCop at the top of impressive.
Nice.
Wow's a pretty small list, but I think the thing that's jumping out to me about it is they all seem to be films that have like a little bit more scope going on. Mm-hmm. Like All Quiet on the Western Front being kind of as big as it is, Anatomy of a Fall being, it's an intimate movie, but it's also very dense in that way.
Yeah.
Where RoboCop's just a little lighter, so it's coming in at 23, and my list at this point is up to 169 movies.
Nice.
So 23 and The Sandwich, Under the Skin, Anatomy of a Fall, then RoboCop, then Showgirls and Barbie.
Oh, wow. What about Showgirls?
Yeah, which I'm still feeling that out.
Okay. I mean, RoboCop's in your DNA.
Yeah, it's one of those, just, it has that nostalgia to it.
Yeah. Man, I'm trying to think of like how it would rank Verhoeven's movies. It would definitely be Showgirls, then probably Total Recall. Then I guess it would be a close race between Basic Instinct and RoboCop. I haven't seen Starship Troopers in a number of years. In my memory, I don't love it as much as everyone else, but I feel like if I watch it again, I'll probably love it.
Okay, so you have RoboCop. You said it's your number four of Verhoeven?
I think, yeah, it would probably be number three. As much as I love Basic Instinct and Neo-Noir and all that, I probably would still put RoboCop above it.
Okay. I'm excited to get there and see where I'm going to come back to this.
Wait, I forgot about Hollow Man. That's number one.
Wait, you have Hollow Man above Showgirls?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I feel like even I can't defend Hollow Man.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, but maybe I need to watch it again. I just remember it like not really working.
No.
But I don't know if that was the result of like the studio system. I don't know what the story is behind that movie.
Only one way to find out, Travis.
Well, I'm not picking it for the next movie, so too bad.
Yeah, what's your pick?
I felt the need to go in a different direction. I feel like the last few movies we've talked about have been like the discussion about them has involved like looking outside the movie a little bit and like what a movie is commenting on and like how it's being meta and all that. And I kind of wanted something a little simpler, just in the sense of like, to me, this movie just has more of a narrative and characters and like you're kind of just exploring how they handle those people. And I have a 4K copy of this movie, which I bought because my wife grew up loving this movie and I haven't seen it in a really long time and I don't remember liking it as much as apparently I'm supposed to. So I am choosing The Princess Bride as our next movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hoping to love it.
Yeah. It's, interesting to me that you don't.
I don't know. It just like, I feel like it's the kind of movie that you almost have to watch when you're a kid or something. Like, I just think about my wife and how she grew up watching it with her family and like they know it really well. It's always struck me as that kind of movie that like I just missed it and I'm not part of that crowd. But I'm hoping 4K viewing will bring me there.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Oh, yeah. But all right, we're at the end. Now, a little controversy about the last episode. Chris is adamant that I am sabotaging this show. And it's hard to argue against that because I listened back to the episode and in my mind, I'm saying we go lights, camera, see ya. When I say see ya, in my mind, I'm saying it before you. I hear this happening. But then I listen back and you're saying it before me. So yeah. Either A, here are the options here. A, some weird glitch is happening. Could be a regular glitch, could be some sort of like supernatural glitch. I don't know. Something is preventing us from doing this. Or B, I like this option a lot more. You're right. I am sabotaging the show. And I'm just doing a really good job of like masking it and saying like, I don't know what's going on. You know, like the more I lean into that character, the more kind of like villainous I become. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like drifting into whatever character this is. So basically we're going down one of those two roads.
Oh, good. That alleviates all of my fears.
But I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to do my best here. Okay.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay. But I could be lying there.
I know. You knave.
And the fact that I'm admitting I'm lying, like, oh, that's too obvious. He would never admit he's lying. But like, that's what I would want you to think.
I know, it makes you such a Dick Jones.
Oh, man. I don't know. I did form a connection with them in this movie.
Of course.
All right. All right. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. Lights?
Camera?
See ya.
God.
Okay. In your mind, what happened there? You said it before me?
Yes.
Oh,
very clearly.
All right.
And obviously.
We're going to find out.